The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
Pastor Jimmy Pruitt, welcome to the Fearless Podcast. How you doing today, brother?
Brother, I'm excited to be here.
So, two weekends ago, my wife and I were at an event in Austin, Texas called Healing Humanity. It was a meetup. And at the meetup, we met Pastor Jimmy and his wife, really awesome people. We got to talk a little bit. So I asked them, hey, could you come on the podcast and kind of let's talk about the stuff that we're talking about? And I appreciate you taking the time and investing it here so that we can talk about the carnivore diet.
Glad to do it. One of my favorite topics.
So maybe, Jimmy, if you could introduce yourself and maybe talk about like what kind of led you to the carnivore diet.
Sure. My wife, Annette, and I, we've been married for now 32 years, and we've got three kids, and life's busy and running and gunning, and we've actually been in ministry the entire time we were married. I was in ministry before we were married, so this is my 40th year of being in ministry, and I love it more now than I did when I started, and not a lot of pastors can say that. So I'm a senior pastor in Fredericksburg, Texas. And what brought us to the carnivore diet, Annette and I met in a gym. I had seen her at church, and I thought she was really pretty, and we were in the singles class. But then I was like, okay, I'm not there for this, you know, just not paying attention as much as I could. And that next week, I was at my gym, and she popped up over there, and so I went over and introduced myself. To this day, she swears I was putting a line on her, but it was not a line. It was honest. I just said, hey, didn't I see you at church last Sunday? And from that moment forward, the rest is history. And 32 years of wow, we call it. And we started healthy. We were working out. We were, of course, back in the day, this would have been back in the day where supplements was king, you know. So I had a tub full of, you know, protein and mega mass and all this stuff. I was kind of bodybuilding back in those days, much more. I've lost all that vanity, I hope, and just, you know, for sometimes not the right reasons, but, you know, wanting to be healthy, and I was an athlete growing up, so I was always in sports of all kinds. So that's how we met, and we literally have continued to stay in the gym our whole lives. I'm 63. She'll be 62 in about 2 weeks, and we feel like we're just turning the clock back. Now, the way we found carnivore was in 2018, we found keto, the ketogenic diet. And we were like, well, this is interesting. It looks like all the foods we like to eat, but there's just things that we need to moderate. And so we started down that track, and I quickly found myself gravitating more to the meat side of things. I grew up in West Texas, and we were all about meat up there. And so meat was easy for me. So I tended to go heavy on the meats, light on the veggies, and nothing on the sugars except for maybe some strawberries here and there, that type of thing. And we saw some great results on it. I felt better. We felt better together. We continued to work out. But it didn't clear up some of the issues that I had. I had chronic IBS since I can remember. I mean, I think even back in high school, probably, all my life, it was so normal to me that I just didn't even think about it. But I was always feeling bloated, always feeling that I overate even when I didn't, especially when I ate vegetables like salads. Because on the ketogenic diet, we were doing all kinds of salads with olive oil and, you know, I mean, just this. But we didn't know what we didn't know at the time. So in about 2 years ago, my son, he is a lead pastor in Houston, Texas. He's up on his sabbatical. He's hanging out with us. We're on our first sabbatical. So we got a lot of downtime to watch YouTube videos, and we were really engaging our health journey because we had 2 months. We were gifted this sabbatical, so we had 2 months with nothing to do. We offloaded all of our responsibilities. Our church took over, and we were able to just get away and really recalibrate our lives. It's a beautiful gift, and it was wonderful for us. But one of the things we want to focus on more than anything was really our health. Last year, I mean, I'd buried so many people through 40 years, and I could honestly say most of them went before their time. At least it seems like it did to me in terms of health. I was burying people in their 50s and 60s and always in 70s, but good night. It was just seemed like people that should have been, could have been healthier. That has always been a motivator for us. So we were watching some YouTube videos. My son, who he likes to weightlift and train, he said, "Hey, have you ever watched this clip with Jordan Peterson on Joe Rogan talking about the carnivore diet?" My wife said, "What's the carnivore diet?" And I had heard of it, and I was intrigued, but we had not really talked about it. He said, "Well, let's pull it up." So it was like 28 minutes, I think. And Jordan Peterson's talking to Joe Rogan about his daughter, Michaela, getting healed, I mean, cured of some lifetime chronic illnesses. And when Jordan, of course, and his wife saw the results, they both stepped into that space as well. And Jordan's fit. He looks amazing. He's got abounding energy, and he's strict. He's all over it. And so when I heard that, we all said, "Well, let's do it." Well, we're kind of ripped the Band-Aid off kind of folks. So we were already doing the ketogenic thing. So it was an easy step. And we stepped right into it the next day. And we loaded up any of the stuff that we had, took it to my daughter's house. She's on staff with us in our church. Our youngest is 24, took all that food over to her. She was happy we did it. And then we literally, hit the ground running, and, we have not looked back. In fact, I'll tell you how many days we've been on this real quick, because I just wrote it down this morning. This is day 619 on the carnivore diet. So we're just rolling, and anyway, that's how we got started, and we just have not looked back.
So what, you know, you're moving into like almost 2 years carnivore. Mm-hmm. What kind of health benefits have y'all experienced in that last 2 years? First off, have you developed scurvy yet?
No, nothing like that. None of the stuff I've heard about. I mean, I feel so good. I mean, no scurvy, none of that stuff.
So what kind of health benefits have y'all been experiencing?
Well, the biggest thing for me was the IBS. And so we went through about 3 weeks of our body trying to figure out what we were doing. There's this period, they call it keto flu in the ketogenic world, but your body's trying to figure it out, because now you're putting in, you know, what Ken Berry calls the proper human diet. And suddenly your body's like waking up, but it's also trying to adjust. And so for about 3 weeks, we noticed, and we were starting the sabbatical, so we were in the gym every day. We noticed we were fatigued. I mean, we had major fatigue for about 3 weeks, but we knew what to expect. We did our research. We had found Dr. Ken Berry, Dr. Chafee, Dr. Kiltz. We had found these guys. And at that time, I was really paying attention to the doctors, especially stepping into this new space. And we found that we were tired, but in 3 weeks, literally, my IBS completely switched. I mean, it was literally 3 weeks into it. We had walked into a Planet Fitness down in Florida. That's where we took some of our time away. And we walked out of the gym that morning, and I looked at Annette and I said, "I could literally turn around and go back and do that all over again." She said, "Me too," because we both had been whining a little bit about how fatigued we were. And suddenly it flipped at exactly the same time for us. We were laughing about it. So my first thing that I noticed immediately was my IBS cleared up, and suddenly I was having normal, you know, bowel movements and normal. I wasn't feeling that bloated or anything like that. Now, we had gotten our panels done right before we started this, checking for inflammation, checking. Later, I went and got my CAC and checked and all that. And so we were curious to see how we were doing. One of the things that I had struggled with when I hit my 50s was hypertension. And that had just crept up on me. My doctor is one of my best friends. He's all over the ketogenic diet. And he was like, "Jimmy, I noticed this is creeping up. Every time you're coming in, it's a little bit higher." And he said, "We might need to address that." And I said, "Well, what do you recommend?" Well, my brother was taking a blood pressure medicine, so I reached out to him. He said, "Well, this is what I've been taking. It's working for me." My doctor said, "Well, sounds good to me." So this is back in my 50s, you know, late 50s. So I really wanted to get off that blood pressure medicine. I was feeling some side effects. I was also on a statin because my mom died at 45 years of age of heart disease. My grandfather died in his late 60s. So, you know, you tell a doctor that, and an uninformed doctor, this was back when we lived in Tennessee, was saying, oh, we've got to get you on a statin right away. This runs in your family. Well, I didn't know what I didn't know. So I'd been on a statin for 15 years just because. And it was giving me some side effects, some weird cramps in my legs and at night, and just weird things in my body that didn't feel right. So I heard Dr. Ken Berry say you could jump off that statin train immediately without any having to wean off or anything. So I immediately stopped the statins. Then on the blood pressure medicine, I did a 2-week wean off where I just began to dial back a little bit at a time. And what I noticed is as I was dialing back, the funny thing is my blood pressure was coming down right with it. So as I was getting off, it was coming down. And by the time I was off, which would have been about 5 weeks probably into the journey, my blood pressure was normal. And I've never had another issue with it again. Those were three things that was really bothered me that I may have the rest to deal with the rest of my life. You know, when you end up going out, you know, going on a trip and you got to start throwing in, you know, filling up those pill boxes. You know, we saw our grandparents, and then at my age, I'm starting to have those. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I was able to get off of everything. And so we're off of all that stuff. We don't take anything. Another thing I had chronic issues with was inflammation. Even though I'm in good shape, I had a lot of inflammation in my body. I thought I had injuries from racing motocross in high school, playing football, basketball, all the crazy stuff I did as a young person. 4 weeks into this thing, all those pains, the leftover pains that keto cleared up, anything that was left actually went away. And we felt like superhumans. We felt supercharged. It was amazing. And so that's what happened for me. Of course, I dropped some weight. I didn't have a lot to drop, but I dropped probably, I think, 20 pounds total. And I went from being very bulky and big to more lean. And I'm very comfortable where I'm at. I'm at 195 pounds. I'm 6'1". And that's my goal. That's where I stay. And that's my zone. And if I get any more than that, I can feel it and sense it in my body. And that's another thing that happened is my body became like a barometer. It was literally, I'm so sensitive to anything. Now, any kinds of food, I know what works and what doesn't. I know if I do a treat meal, I know what to do and what not to do and how much to do and how much not to do. So yeah, I mean, it's like your body is, you start to communicate with your own body and you know where you're at. And that same type of thing. She lost a good 25, 30 pounds and she carried it well. You wouldn't have known it, but she feels so good. And we're so committed to this that we just decided to get over being worried about the social aspects. And now, of course, our church, everybody knows now, so we don't have any real issues here. And a lot of people in our church are now doing this and seeing some great results themselves.
That is awesome. And that's really, honestly, what I wanted to talk about. You know, what I've experienced as a Christian, you know, growing up in church and being part of the community and different things. There's a lot of what we do is based around food. And in Western Christianity, in America, food is like the pardonable sin, you know, gluttony and, you know, gluttony is fine. And food is the acceptable, drug. And the way that our modern food system is with, highly processed foods and all these different things are the standard American diet. And these highly processed packaged foods are ultra addictive. And it never gets talked about. When we have these fellowship meals, they always exclusively involve, you know, the food table is always, there's always a small salad section on the right hand end. Then you'll have some food of various varieties. And then usually about half of the table are the desserts. Like the dessert section is usually the largest section. And it's amazing to me how this goes undiscussed and so many people suffer physically because of this. And it's totally socially acceptable, you know, and the Bible talks about gluttony and, you know, if you're given to the gluttony to take a knife to your throat, you know, and we know that as Christians, our body is a temple of the Holy Spirit, right? And a mentor of mine, Jim Rohn, says your body's a temple, not a woodshed. You know what I mean? And yet, yeah. As Christians, it's this socially acceptable thing. It's like, if you talk about people being overweight, you are kind of body shaming, you know, and they can't help it. And it's just the way I've always been, you know, and, you know, the Coca-Colas and all these other things. And it really gets overlooked. And like you were saying, far too many people, one, they live a very sick life with an inordinate amount of illnesses. And many of them, due to all these self-inflicted comorbidities, are dying far too young. They feel terrible most of their life because of things like IBS and blood sugar and maybe diabetes or pre-diabetes, and they have all these ailments, so they're on all these different prophylactic medications, and it creates a life of psychologically what it does to your mind with all these low-fat diets, and you're not feeding your brain, so people are very depressed, they're down. And what it's creating everything opposite of who a Christian is, how they should act, how they should function, right? And as disciples of Christ, we should be disciplined, right? We should be able to say no to food. We should be able to control ourselves. We're commanded to fast and do these different things. And in modern, postmodern Western Christianity, it's a full pass. It's something you don't talk about because it's like, it's taboo to even talk about it. And when there's something like the carnivore diet that is overly simplistic, I mean, there's nothing more simple to implement, and this is available to people, it's really sad that they're just living a sick, defeated, depressed life, and it's almost 100% because of what they're putting in their mouth.
Tragedy of it is that as Annette and I have worked really hard to put the right fuel in our body. I mean, like you said, I used to work for Dave Ramsey up in Tennessee in Nashville area, and thing he always said, he talked in terms of finance, he says, it's granny's common sense. He said, you know, what he teaches isn't outlandish. It isn't over the top. And it's really similar in that space as what we're learning in this space is how simple it is. And to me, less is more. And what's hard is when I'm going to the hospital, make a visit. And I know that person. I know how they eat. I know how they live. And it breaks my heart because it's so hard to address that. It's interesting that I can preach and teach from the pulpit on just about anything, and I'll get cheers and claps and shouts and all that. But when I go towards a refrigerator, I start talking about food addiction. That is when I get the signal, you know, preacher, you've gone from preaching to meddling. And, mm-hmm. and it's literally like, I mean, you can feel the barometric pressure change in the room. And I warned him yesterday. I said, it's time to talk about this, because I was talking about mind, body, and spirit, that we're made up of three parts. And we've got to navigate each of those spheres well. We have to steward them, to use my old boss's terminology. We have to steward well the blessings of God. We've been given the mind of Christ, the scripture tells us. We've been given not a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and of a sound mind, the ability to think well, process well, reason well, logic well. We've been given that. We've been given these bodies, these temples, as you said, the temple of the Holy Spirit. You nailed it. And we have to steward them, and it's like a good car. It will run long if you take care of it. Or a good truck, it will run long if you take care of it. You do the right thing. things along the way, not all the emergency things because you didn't tend to it. Now you're playing catch up. But when you feed it the right fuel, God created our bodies to operate properly. They come into alignment. And that's what I've been amazed by, but also in the mental space. You mentioned like the brain fog. John Eldredge calls it the fog of war. You know, it's this thing that settles on your mind and you feel like you can't think straight. I heard someone today. He's 70 years old, full of inflammation, precious man, wonderful human being. He's talked to me. He's asked questions. When I told him, he said, "You mean I can't have dessert?" And I said, "Well, let's redefine dessert, what that is." And so, it was a deal breaker for him. But he still comes and talks to me, and I was talking to him today, and he helps us here at the church. And he said, "I'm 70 years old," and he is so, to use in Texas term, he is stove up. I mean, he has got so much inflammation. He hobbles around. He's a little bit bent over. And at 70 years of age, he's only 7 years older than me. I mean, it just breaks my heart, but he's already sent me this, you know, he's already shot a flare up saying, "Don't go there." Yeah. You know, he'll smile, but people don't want to hear it. And you nailed it, TD. It's an addiction. It's a legitimate, for real addiction. And these are lifelong chronic addictions. This isn't like something I picked up in the 12th grade, you know, in high school and public school or college or whatever. This is something that from when we were little infants and we were teething, our parents gave us those sugar tablets, you know, to get us to be quiet. You know, all they did was distract us. And then we got addicted to sugar. I mean, in all its forms. And now we carry those into adulthood. So, as you said, as a believer, as a follower of Jesus, we've got to steward well the blessings of God, our minds, our bodies, and our spirits.
Now, one of the things that we're battling is an inordinate amount of disinformation and misinformation. There's a lot of what I call Seventh-day Adventist propaganda, like this Loma Linda University propaganda, all this plant-based stuff that is based in pseudoscience and all kinds of like spurious Bible-twisting. And so, you know, how do you approach that? Because, you know, you get that all the time from Christians. Well, God created us and he put us in the Garden of Eden, you know, and he made all these plants for us to eat. So, you know, what you're doing is unbiblical.
Yeah, I've gotten that. I've always gotten the question too on Acts or Genesis 1:29 talks about grains and seeds and different things. And my stock answer for that is, first of all, we don't live in the Garden of Eden anymore. We're in a fallen world. When the world fell, it came under a curse. You know, our DNA longs for Eden and remembers Eden. We know there's something better. Our spirit longs for heaven, but we're stuck in the in-between right now. And the in-between is a world that is harsh, that is dangerous, that has plants and animals and other people and brokenness and sin and dysfunction that wants to take us out. And so when people say that to me, I say, we don't have those kinds of plants anymore. The world is under a curse. Everything is fallen. That's comparing apples and oranges. They're not even the same thing. So that's my first answer to that. And I just say, you know, I'm going to steward my body well under the direction of the Spirit of God. The Bible says we're to be led by the Spirit. We're to walk by the Spirit. It's not like I just thought, I heard Jordan Peterson and said, "Oh, well, I'm just going to go chase that train down the track." No, I thought about it. I prayed about it. I looked up things in the Bible, and I saw things like arise, kill, and eat. Now, they're speaking my language right there. And so when people try to do that to me or push me in a corner, I ask them, when's the last time you actually partook of a real apple that was not genetically modified, that wasn't turned into candy, and that wasn't bought at your local grocery store in the organic section? You know, when was the last time you actually went out on a real farm with real organic soil that was tilled with manure and all the good stuff that puts nitrogen and things back in the soil, and actually ate a real plant. First of all, you wouldn't even recognize it if you saw it. It would be so small and so different than what you're used to, and it wouldn't be loaded with sugar and glucose and all that. You know, you wouldn't even recognize that fruit. And so I tell people, the day you can start buying that kind of fruit and I can get a hold of it, I might start partaking of some of those things again. But that day hasn't come. In fact, if anything, we're further away from it than we've ever been.
Yeah, and furthermore, what is more fascinating to me is that God created these ruminant animals, right, to eat this substance that nobody can eat, usually in an area that nobody can farm. You know, these cows can graze the edges and the tree lines and different things, and they can convert this unedible plant into nutrient-dense, highly processed, highly nutrient-dense. They process it for us so that we can eat it. And then when you do that, it is incredibly healing, and it's fascinating. So you see, God is sovereign. God exists outside of time, right? God knew when we got to 2025, God knew in eternity what the food system would be like, what the monolithic mega corporations would be like, mm-hmm. and the processed cereals and all this stuff. So he provided a way, and this is what I think gets lost on people, is God is providing a way for them to eat healthy food. And honestly, if you're truly analyzing it financially and participating, it is a very, it's not financially difficult. It's not a financial hardship. Once you eliminate the Starbucks coffee and the five Dr. Peppers and the bag of chips and the dessert, once you eliminate, you have the money where you can buy decent quality meat. You know, there's enough studies now and enough anecdotal evidence and enough docs talking about this. You don't need to buy grass-fed, grass-finished beef. You can literally buy Costco, Sam's Club, just off-of-the-counter beef, and people can do this and have amazing health results, mental clarity, depression lifted and gone. And this is, you know, when we get into this mental aspect, so many people, you know, wrestle with depression and anxiety. And I think the stats now are like in excess of 50% people that are on these SSRIs and different things. You know, like you said, hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. So if your mind is troubled, if you have that anxiety, if you have that fear, for one, a pill was never the solution. You know, the petrochemical, pharmaceutical, industrial complex was never the answer to that. God has the answer to that. There's people that struggle and suffer from that. And the amazing thing is, put everything down. Throw away the bottle of pills, pick up a steak. I mean, these are very uncomplicated things to do. And what I always say,
go outside.
Go outside, stand in the sun, put your feet in the dirt. You know, there's these very simple, inexpensive to no expense things that you can do that can alleviate that. And then it's not like this, well, you know, this is just something that I struggle with, and, you know, my mama had it, and, you know, and my granddaddy had it, and all these different things, and people live in this circular defeat-death spiral, and they see no way out, and these same people are devout Christians, they're in the Word every day, you know, they're fervently praying, they're doing all the things that they know that they should do, but yet they're still defeated, and they're defeated by their own, by the table. You know, it says in the last days, the table is going to become a snare. And I completely believe that this is it. I mean, our table has just trapped us, and it's making very great, awesome people that could be very effective Christians, it's just making them live a life of defeat because they're just trapped by the food they put in their mouth.
So agree with you, brother. Every point right there. I remember being a young Christian. I didn't become a Christian until I was 18 years of age, the very end of my senior year of high school. And I wasn't raised in a Christian home, a good home, but not a Christian home. So I had good morals. My dad was a firefighter, first responder. So I grew up in that culture. So I learned some good things. But when I became a Christian, and I was very healthy, I played sports, did all that stuff. So I came out of high school healthy. And I was looking at, I was starting to go to church for the first time in my life and walking into this foreign environment, you know, with my mullet. You know, this would have been back in 1980, mullet and a Journey t-shirt and, you know, just typical rocker West Texas kid. And the first thing I noticed, I kid you not, T, the first thing I noticed was how overweight and how obese the pastor was. And I literally, as a brand new baby Christian, and I was always a good thinker. I always, even though I was a Christian, I still tried to think well. And I remember thinking, this does not add up. Something's not right here. Because it wasn't about being vain or anything. It was just like, okay, I'm a new Christian. From what I've read so far in this confusing book, somebody finally got me a translation I could understand. I was like, oh, okay, this is better. King James, Elizabethan English was rough on me at first. And as I was trying to understand and learn all these new things, I remember thinking that the Bible seems to tell me, especially the New Testament, that if I will walk in obedience to him and I will do what he says, then I will have extended life. I will have a blessed life. And I read John 10:10, which is very, very common verse, but you know, the thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. And then Jesus flips the script and says, but I came that you might have life and have it more abundantly, or life to the full, depending on what translation you're looking at. And I remember thinking, that's what I want. I also read where it says that we have the mind of Christ. So I'm thinking, if I have the mind of Christ and I have the ability to reason well, logic well, think well, in other words, I've got something better than just common sense. I've got his sense, his emotions. So as I read and studied these things, even very early on, I stayed active. I tried to take care of myself. I tried to do the right things because I felt like my physical mattered, my mind mattered, and definitely my spirit mattered. That was what I was playing catch up with. And to this very day, one of the things I say is that, and I think I said this at the meetup, is that we're like a three-legged stool. And you take a three-legged stool and cut 2 inches off of one leg, try sitting on it. Well, that stool has now been rendered dysfunctional. It will not function. It's either cut the other legs off, which that's not a great solution. Now it doesn't fit the bar you're trying to sit under, or the counter. And people are living that way. You just said it. I'm just saying it in a different way. We're just coming at it from a different tack. Is that people are trying to live their lives with one or two legs short, and they can't figure out why their life isn't working. And they think, well, it must be spiritual. The devil must be attacked. I must be under spiritual attack. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. It could be you're making decisions that are not in alignment with God's best for your life. So let's figure out what those things are. And I guarantee you 9 times out of 10, and you just said it, it's going to come back to what they're putting in their body.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, growing up in church and then going to seminary and traveling and moving across the country and all these different things, you know, I would always see that correlation. And it's so impossible. It's so impossible. And I know this sounds like judgy or whatever, but the Bible does say judge righteous judgment. But when you see a fat pastor, it's one thing if the congregate, hey, in 2025, most people are overweight. So it's not really like a judgment call. And this crazy processed food is doing it. And 90% of all the grocery stores are this terrible garbage that shouldn't even pass for human consumption. So it doesn't mean that anybody gets a pass, but if you're a pastor, right, and you're exhorting and admonishing the flock and you're telling them, you know, thou shalt do this and thou shalt not do that, and if you're morbidly obese, it doesn't get lost on people, you know, and that's one of the reasons, you know, you can have all different kinds of sin, right? And much of sin is in your mind, right? And in the dark, and no one knows about it, you know? And if it gets bad enough, eventually be sure your sins will find you out and everybody Correct. Knows about it. But when you have this food addiction problem and it's literally hanging over your belt, I mean, it's just, it's on display for the whole world to see. And there's no way, obviously, okay, you know, we're commanded to fast and pray, you know, Christ said, regarding the devils, you know, this kind goeth not out by prayer and fasting, right? And we're commanded to do that. And how in the world is an obese pastor supposed to convince somebody that you should fast when you can clearly see that he does not? And, you know, and it also, when you're trying to explain to people that, you know, following Christ and being a disciple by sheer definition requires discipline, right? And then when you see that someone has no discipline, and I'm not throwing rocks at them, it's not all their fault. I mean, high fructose corn syrup and these seed oils, it is the food equivalent of crack, and people are that addicted to it. So I'm not bashing anybody over the head, but they got to think about this. I mean, we have so many dear older folks that we love and appreciate. They're suffering in pain, and you know, and they're on all these medications, and it's exclusively because of what they're eating.
You're so right. You know, the rates of dementia and Alzheimer's has just skyrocketed along with cancer. We see this. We're in a multi-generational church. So we've got a good population of older folks. We've got good middle, young. It looks like our town. And I love having a multi-generational church. But what's so tragic is watching these precious saints who are wonderful human beings, are wonderful people, but they've never connected the dots between their health and their faith life. So as Americans, and we're Western thinkers by nature, we're Greek thinkers, we're not Hebrew thinkers, which is Eastern, we tend to think categorically. We tend to think in disconnected categories or compartments. We call it compartmentalization. That is how we think. And that's how most people navigate life. That's how they deal and cope with stress, pain, disappointment, disillusionment, all those things, is they put things in categories, and then they take that category and they move it away. They move it off to the side so they don't have to think about it. Well, when it comes to food addictions and any kind of addiction, really, but we're talking about food today, they're taking that addiction, they're putting it in a box, and they're setting it over here to say, I know I need to deal with this. I know I should do something about this. I would dare say some may even know that Jesus probably isn't pleased with this, if you were to get down to brass tacks about it. Because when we're out with people, of course, we order a steak wherever we go, typically fajita meat if we're in a Mexican food restaurant, which Texas, as you know, being here 8 years now, they're on every corner. I always just say, hey, would you mind just cooking mine on the grill, you know, just throw it on a flat grill. And they typically do keep away from the seed oils. But wherever we are, we're clear with our waiter, our waitress, when we make our order. We don't try to make it dramatic. We just give them a simple, here's what we need. And we rarely have an issue with that. But everybody who comes with us, now they're looking at their plate and they're nervous. They would not be nervous if they didn't know internally, innately, inherently that what they're doing is killing them. There's a reason why. It's not because we're eating right, but it does, I think, tend to highlight that. But the fact that they're reacting the way they are, and then they'll say, well, we're not going to do dessert since, you know, you're not. And we'll go, well, you do what you do. We're going to do what we do. You know, no judgment here. Yeah. Maybe a little internally, but you know what I'm saying? I'm kind of like, you know, it's heartbreaking to watch. And it's so funny how they will act and respond around us because they innately feel bad about it because they know it's not good for them. Because they feel so terrible. What's interesting, when we did our 2-month sabbatical, as I referred to nearly a couple of years ago, no one saw us for 2 months, not even our own daughter who works at our church. Because we said, Faith, we can't spend time with you because all you ever talk about is church. So we're trying to not do that. So we hardly saw even our own daughter and her husband. And no one saw us because we were out of town, some of that. And we live out in the country, so we stayed out of our place. And when we went into town, we went into a different town. We didn't go to Fredericksburg, went to Bernie or San Antonio. And when we came back 2 months later and we walked in the door, literal jaws dropped. They could not believe how thin, how healthy we looked. Some even said we had a glow about us, you know, a little high pro glow, you know, dog food. They had a glow. And it was so interesting how people reacted to us because they saw the difference. Well, it's interesting. So now when we go out to eat with people, we're with people. And I'm bringing it back to where we started in this conversation is that people are asking us questions while we're ordering. They're not upset. They're curious because they see the difference. And Annette, she's 62, about to be 63. I don't know a hotter 63-year-old in America, to be quite honest. I mean, the girl, she's a beast in the gym. She's always been that way, always been athletic. But I mean, the girl is just a gorgeous girl. And people, of course, the ladies all want to talk to her about her weight. That seems to. And Annette says, we didn't do this primarily for our weight. We're doing it for our longevity because we feel like we have been given this life to steward. And however long we're allowed to live on this earth, we want to run through the tape and finish strong. So if we get to live to 80 or to 90 or whatever, whenever that last day happens, we don't want it to be because we were so crushed our bodies with inflammation or our brain was so fogged up or so protein deprived. And cholesterol deprived because we listen to doctors. We want to finish strong and run over the finish line. So we have people constantly asking us questions, which is wonderful. We've learned to not be as excited about it as we were at first. I'm sure you went through some of that. Yeah. People would want to know, and then you would drop the whole bomb on them, you know? So we've learned. we were carnivore evangelists initially. Now we've learned to be a little more strategic about it and let people ask questions.
Another thing that you bring up that's fascinating to me in Christianity is in America, I would say 90% of professing Christianity truly believes that the abbreviation MD stands for medical deity. You know, everything is like, well, I went to the doctor, you know, and they go for their checkup every couple of months or whatever. And, you know, I went to my checkup and it's never like, man, everything's great. It's always like, well, this number is wrong and that number is wrong. And there's a pill for that. And there's a pill for that. And there's a pill for that. And they bow. And we've been programmed, once again, I mean, we've been programmed like this, and this is a petrochemical propaganda, you know, this goes back to Rockefeller, Big Oil.
It does.
I mean, this is a real conspiracy that is absolutely documented, you know, and unfortunately, Christians have fallen into this trap that the doctors, and personal testimony, you know, I grew up, my mom was a huge reader, and I mean, I don't even know how many times she read her Bible. I'd wake up early, and she'd be studying her Bible, and everything, but she never stopped reading, and she started reading a lot of health, and we were super crunchy. We were super crunchy. We were organic before there was organic. When there was one health food store, and we had to drive like 45 minutes to get there, and we couldn't afford it, and we were eating everything out of there, but you know what? it was our doctor. And over the erosion of time, he convinced them, you know. And, you know, my dad struggled with strokes and different things. And my dad passed like about 4 years ago. And now my mom is in this mental decline. And it's because of the food, you know, it's because of the food. And she put too much faith into these medical deities and just they hung on their words. He's got to be right. This pill's going to work. And, you know, this is what I should do. And what's more fascinating is a large percentage of the population, because of 2020, learned a lot about the medical community and a lot about standard practices and recommendations and medical procedures and all this stuff. And I really do hope that that helps shift this psychological position that we're in now, where these people are being unquestionably followed. Like, you know, don't question the science, listen to your doctor, ask your doctor if you need, you know, polyspenzidol or whatever, because goodness, you know, you can't keep your budget. And it's fascinating.
It is. And it's heartbreaking, because you know how it is when you start to get a sense of, you know, I'm not saying I'm 1,000% right, but I feel like I know the truth about some things. And when you want to share that with others and they're resistant to it, the reason they're resistant, exactly what you said, they've been trained by a system that was designed to do just that. The system that has been designed is working. And that's not a, I'm not going down a, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm a conspiracy therapist. You know, I mean, if it's real, it's real. And I think there's been a real wake up call among folks, you know, in terms of what we're doing and realizing that, you know, medical, pharma, food industry, you know, these are all in this cycle together. They actually feed one another. And many of the larger corporations, organizations own the same. They own the product that gets you sick and the pill that's supposed to make you well that never does. And they've created these loops that people are living in. The heartbreaking thing is my own daughter, she's 24, my youngest, 24 years old, and she is eat up with inflammation. She is sick constantly, chronically. She was told by a therapist in college that she's on the spectrum. And all these things are going on in her. She's got PCOS. Dr. Kiltz, by the way, has volunteered to help her. And awesome, I can't wait for them to have that conversation, for him to say, honey, eat more meat. I mean, I know what he's going to prescribe, but he's willing to talk to her. I'm excited about that. But we can't tell her that. We're the rents. We're parents, right? Yeah. We're just she's not going to listen to us. She loves us, respects us, but when it comes to food, she's addicted to food. Mm-hmm. But she loves her doctors, and she goes to the doctor all the time. And when we try to say anything, she'll say, yeah, but my doctor said this is okay. Let me give you one quick story. Annette's sister was 69 years of age. Her kidneys were collapsing. She had type 2 diabetes, adult onset, very typical. She was obese. It ran in Annette's family. And Annette was willing to give up, one of her kidneys for her. And she was on dialysis and all that, and she was starting to decline. So we went to the hospital together in San Antonio, went through battery of tests. So the night before they were going in to get all these tests, which means if you pass these tests, you are a candidate for a transplant. So my wife is going to give her sister a kidney. It turns out their blood type matched and all that. We're in the hotel the night before. It's 10 o'clock. We did one of those shared rooms that had a door between it. And Annette goes over to her sister's room and her husband. And at 10 o'clock at night, they're eating. Now, you're from, you know, Texas now. They're eating a full Whataburger meal. Drinking it, you know, the big Cokes that come with Whataburger about this big. They come with fries. You know, it's a big hamburger. probably laced in all kinds of seed oils and everything. So they're wolfing down Whataburgers the night before. The next morning, she's going to have all these major tests to determine if she's a candidate for a transplant. So in my mind, first of all, I'm frustrated because my wife's willing to give up a body part for her sister. And Annette actually said something to her about it. And you know what her answer was? My doctor said this was okay. Mm. She went in the next day for tests. And by all counts, her body is so full of inflammation, so full, and had just ingested, and they passed her with flying colors to get this kidney transplant. And I'm thinking, what's going on here? There is no way she is healthy enough to handle that kind of major surgery. She passed 6 months later. She was not able to get the transplant because she went down that fast. And I'll never forget those words. My doctor said this was okay. And that's Annette's why, by the way. When I talked about at the meetup, we need to clarify our why. Why are we doing what we're doing? It's not about the what, it's the why. And that's Annette's why, is walking with her sister through that. And then she passes away right when she turned 70. And Annette's determined not to do that.
Yeah, well, I have an incredibly close family member, you know, that I grew up with. And they were crunchy just like me. And, well, full transparency, it's my twin sister. And she's on one of these semaglutide shots, you know? She's on, like, Ozempic or something.
Right.
And here's somebody that's far smarter than I am and knows better, you know, and I'm trying to tell her. And I actually had I had Dr. Baker on. And I sent her the podcast. I'm like, you know, and I think all of us have that why. I think all of us have those family members or those church family members that we just sympathize with and we have compassion for, or maybe just our neighbor or somebody at work. I think we all have those people. Mm-hmm. And it's so wild that there's such a simple solution, you know, and I realize simple isn't easy, but that goes for everything in life, you know, financially, the simple things that you do will reap the greatest harvest financially if you're disciplined, you know, once again, and all of these things tie back together, you know, and this is all predicated upon scripture.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's so difficult and frustrating. That's why I wanted to have you on here and talk about this from a Christian perspective and someone else that has had tremendous success. We're like, I think over 600 days in. I think May or June is our 2-year anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
So I just had my blood work done. It looks incredible. I think it even my blood work I had right before we started came back really good, and I think this blood work looks even better.
Great.
Because still the people – I was just at a commercial conference thing and was sitting at a table and was talking to them about carnivore and different things. And people are so – you know, they bring up the blood pressure thing, and they bring up the cholesterol thing.
Cholesterol is the big one, yeah.
And – you know, now I can say, well, 2 years in, I mean, my cholesterol is perfect. I mean, technically, okay, I'm 258 or whatever, but I remember when I was 20 some years old when 250 was good, you know?
It was the norm. Yeah.
Yeah. They keep dropping that number.
They do. I wonder why.
Yeah. It correlates with the prescription. It's amazing.
Doesn't it though?
You know, a brief commercial break. Brother, do you still drink coffee? I know there's some carnivores that don't drink coffee.
Actually do. I do it with heavy cream. I don't put a lot in there. I don't do any sweeteners at all. I've never have. And I do enjoy my morning coffee.
Well, if you enjoy your coffee, I have a treat for you, because every guest on the Fearless Podcast gets a bag of coffee. We have our own line here.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so we have a light, medium, and a dark roast. We also have something you probably haven't heard of. It's called a white roast. So it's a first crack roast. It's very nice and high in caffeine, but and it's all organic and all that good stuff. We even have a decaf line, but just let me know what roast you prefer and whether you want whole bean or ground. And
further better and ground's good. That's easier. It's quicker.
Okay. Darker ground.
Yeah.
You got it. I like to make sure that all of our
appreciate
guests
that.
Get to taste it and hope you enjoy it. This has been just a great conversation. And I appreciate the way that you articulate it. And I know when we met, we kind of hit it off right away. And I was looking forward to having you on. But in closing, do you have any kind of closing thoughts or anything you want to say in closing?
Well, I don't ever want to put out there that it's, you made this comment is a good comment, TD. You said it's simple, but that doesn't always mean easy. And I don't ever want to put out, I do this with Christianity. I don't tell people like, look, this is not a cakewalk. There's blessings. There's all that. There's good things. But there's also a cost to discipleship. Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote a great book, The Cost of Discipleship. There's a cost. But there's also to be healthy. Anything good in life is going to cost you something. You've got to be willing to sacrifice. I love the word discipline. It's the root word of discipleship. And people forget that. You know, they think, gosh, this shall be easy. And we've created such easy on-ramps to everything in life and in our Western civilization, particularly here in America, because we have prosperity. And even in our worst times, we were still more prosperous than just about anybody in the world. And so we've created easy, convenient on-ramps. The interesting thing about carnivore, there's nothing more convenient than firing my pellet grill up and throwing a steak on. And cleaning the kitchen takes about 30 seconds. You know, I mean, if you want something that's easy, that works, that's simple, I don't count calories. I do exactly what Dr. Ken Berry says, eat until you're comfortably stuffed. And I know my cutoff point and I've got all that dialed in. And so if you want something that actually works, that will potentially save your life, I mean, this could do it. If anything, it will extend your life and the quality of your life, no matter how old you are. So I'm a champion right now at 63. I want to be a poster child for aging. I'm happy to be 63 years old. I don't snap, crackle, and pop like I used to when I get out of bed. When inflammation's gone, a lot of that stuff goes away. I get out of bed in the morning. I get up at 5:30 every morning or before because I am high on life. I'm living up in a down world. I want to get it. I'm ready to go in the mornings. My morning time is my favorite time of the day. And I try to sleep well, try to get about 7 hours of sleep. So it seems to be working for me, 6.5, 7. And I feel good there. I've got all that dialed in. But I want people to know that this is doable. This isn't crazy. The only reason it sounds crazy is because you've been taught another way. And the tragedy is you've been taught the alternative, not the real thing. This is the real thing. And we just want to encourage people. Our heart, by the way, we don't monetize this. We're not making money. This is not a multi-level marketing thing. You know, we're not building a pyramid here, nothing like that. There's nothing in it for me monetarily. It's just the joy of getting to help people extend their life, their quality of life, and hopefully begin to teach the next generation and the next so that they can even start younger than we did. And I'm sad we had to wait so long, but I'm not going to bemoan the past. I'm going to be thankful. I love what I heard somebody recently say. Let's make the rest of our life the best of our life, and that would be what I would leave you with today.
Yeah, and normally that was perfectly said, and it was a great way to close. But you know what you brought up about we're not selling anything, and this isn't a pyramid. That's the problem. Right. The problem is this isn't a pill with a label on a bottle. Right. That's the problem. And that's the same problem the medical industrial complex cannot monetize this in any way. And that is the issue. So that's why it's exclusively education, it's caring and sharing. And this has just been such a tremendous episode. Oh, Pastor Jimmy, where can folks find you if they're looking for you?
Okay. Well, I pastor a church in Fredericksburg, Texas called Bridge Church. So you can go to Bridge Church, Fredericksburg, Texas, Google that, or you can go to bridgefbg.com. And we also, Annette and I do a podcast. Every other week, Annette and I do the podcast together. It's called Living Up in a Down World. Find us on any platform. And on every other week, we do that. The week in between, it's called Living Up in a Down World Conversations. I've had Adam Curry on my program. Adam invented podcasting 20 years ago. He was an MTV VJ. He's in my church. He's my best friend. I got to baptize him 2 years ago, and he's on fire. He calls himself a Jesus freak. And so I do a lot with him. He's the one who helped me, got me into podcasting. And I'll have him
he's
back
the
on
pod
the show.
Father.
He is the pod father. Yeah, he was on Rogan recently, and he's sharing Jesus everywhere he goes. He invented a product called the Godcaster. And if you go to our website, bridgefbg.com, scroll down about halfway, you'll see a thing called the Godcaster. You can listen to podcasts on there. You can listen to Christian music, contemporary Christian, edgy Christian music, with little things we put in there called the Daily Grind, which are little encouragements. And you can click on that and listen to music and encouragement 24/7. It's the new way. Broadcasting's going away. Small radio stations are dying. And Adam Curry and some of his friends, and I've been a part of programming this. We're the guinea pig, and it's taken off. We're on about 250 stations right now and growing. And, so check that out. It's called the Godcaster. And we're here to encourage you. Our whole point of living in this season of life. You know, when I was younger, I was about myself, and then I was about my kids. Well, now I'm about the world, about the next generation. How can we set up everybody else for success in our minds, in our bodies, and in our spirits? So anything we can do to help and to encourage you, that's what we're here for. But do check out our podcast. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, that's a perfect way to wrap up. I appreciate your time. We love and appreciate y'all. We want to thank all of our customers. This is a value for value proposition. So if you love our information, go on over to thetexasboys.com. Check out the new coffee line, or check out our new tallow skincare and deodorant line over at thetexasboys.com. And we'll see y'all on the next show.